From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and the new director of the FBI. So congratulations to me. And our Charlotte panel includes psychologist, author, AspieCon founder, and Comic-Con panelist, Dr. Frank Gaskell. Frank, how are you doing these days?
Doing pretty good. Keeping the weight off. Yep. Feeling good. Eating cheese again. It's nice.
You know, it's always good when you can eat cheese again.
Yep.
And also, Dr. Wright.
What a mistake.
Oh.
Ooh.
I slipped up.
Sorry
about that. Not quite Dr. Wright. Emma Kate Wright's here. She's a doctoral intern in psychology, which means she is one whisker away from being PhD. How close are we now, Emma Kate?
I am actually much closer, given that I have a full draft of my dissertation submitted to my mentor, waiting for some feedback.
Do you know what? I'm going to tell you a real quick dissertation story. In the graduate school at UNC at Chapel Hill, the people in the grad school were so mean to everybody who was checking out with their dissertations. They were measuring them by the quarter inch and all this stuff for their margins, and they were just like super mean, that I remember standing there and I said, about a year or two from now, they're going to come ask me for money and I'm going to tell them this story and I'm going to say no. And it didn't happen until this year that they called me directly. And they're like, we see you haven't contributed to the university. Why is that? And I told them this little story about how mean the graduate school was.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't do it.
That's great.
I support that.
There you go. All right. And also, we have Jonathan Hederle here. He's a licensed professional counselor. He's an expert on substance abuse treatment, and he's our certified Asian. He's also written published book chapters on Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and Walking Dead. He's served as a panelist for Heroes Con and a bunch of other cool things. And each week, he follows the news and finds two great stories of psychology in the news that we call Being Human.
So the fidget spinner backlash is growing at schools across the U.S. Now, according to Fidget Spinner Database, it has a database, Spinner List, 32% of the top 200 American high schools have banned spinners from the premise. Now, fidget spinners were originally intended to help ease symptoms of ADHD and anxiety, but some of the cited criticisms include being taken out during class, being a distraction to other students and staff, and being thrown around in the hallways, cafeteria, and at recess. So, Frank, as our resident backlasher, what do you think of schools banning fidget spinners?
Well, I'm glad you asked me, Jonathan. I really do appreciate this question. It is right in my wheelhouse. And basically, fidgets are very good for a particular kind of child. ADHD kids, kids on the autism spectrum, the research is very clear that fidget devices work for these kids. The spinners haven't been studied because they didn't really exist, but other devices have been studied and they do work. And what's crazy is there's some of these ADHD and autism kids are basically saying, I'm really glad that all my friends have these fidget devices because now I'm not the one with the quote unquote special tool. And so they felt like, okay, cool, you know, I'm not the weirdo, because before they were sort of ostracized. Now everybody's got
it.
Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you, you're saying there is research that says that this is helpful to an ADHD kid. Is there research on that?
Yes, there is.
Research that you made up in your head or like actual research that was published in a peer-reviewed journal?
Actual research in peer-reviewed journals. I can give you the name of Melissa Ferry, a special education instructor who's done research in this area. I've looked at some psychologists who've published, a neuropsychologist who's published.
There's the Gaskell Weekly.
It's legit stuff. I mean, we're talking, it's not even just statistically significant. We're talking percentages in the order of 20-30% improvement in concentration.
And what's the improvement? Okay.
In concentration and attention. Yeah.
But I think Frank made a good point in talking about how this is for a specific type of child. Now, other kids who are not on the spectrum, who do not have ADHD or anxiety, this is probably not going to be as effective at helping them, and they're probably going to misuse this. And I imagine teachers are probably getting a lot of distractions in the classroom. I know you talked about like throwing them all over in the hallways, and some of them have little things on them. So I could see how it could be kind of dangerous as a little projectile. while. But the reality is, if clear expectations are set on how they're supposed to be used, it shouldn't be a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of just broadly banning these things, I mean, I get that, but they can't. And if parents are listening to this podcast, they cannot ban your child's fidget device if they have an IEP or a 504 plan and it's included in part of their instructional plan. If they do, that's actually against the law.
Yeah, I want my fidget IEP.
Frank has a fidget device, but it has been banned from any public place.
Oh, wow.
I just like that, Frank. I just like that Frank used the term special tool, because that's how I always viewed
I call
Frank.
You a special tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
All right.
I'm an idiot.
So moving on. This next study looks at how personality may change when you drink, but less than you think. So the idea that we transform into different people when we're under the influence is a popular one, but the science on drunk personality as a concept is less clear. Now, according to research recently published in Clinical Psychological Science, a journal of the Association for Psychological Science, of the five-factor model of personality, extroversion was the only factor robustly perceived to be different when people participated in the consumption of alcohol and then studied during their sober condition. So, Emma-Kate, as our resident drunk, mm-hmm. what do you think of the drunk personality myth?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think I'm that different, truthfully, when I've had alcohol. other than just being dumber. I don't know. I make terrible decisions like most people.
But other than that, I'm no different.
No different. No. I mean, I do feel a little bit more extroverted. And I don't know if that's just my perception of, you know, how alcohol does impact the central nervous system. And it's a depressant. It does kind of loosen you up a little bit, make you less inhibited, make poor decisions. It's not surprising. But I don't really think I'm that different other than being dumber when I drink.
I would just like to interject.
Okay, let's hear it.
Is this an intervention?
Here we go.
No, I would just like to say there are some parts of your personality that are magnified.
Yes.
So like earlier today, you hit me in the head and it hurt a little bit.
a little bit.
In prior circumstances, my glasses flew across the room after an aggressive moment.
Yeah.
And let's say like your ability to scoot a bowl over on a table when you haven't anything to drink, it's very subtle. Like you could scoot a bowl of soup over, but let's say you had consumed some alcohol and 2/3 of that soup bowl kind of spill all over in a restaurant.
The question was about personality, not motor movement.
Yes, that is a good point.
You cornered us. Yeah. Look at that.
Good point.
Man, who's the fool now, Frank?
Yep, I'm foolish. I've become much more loving.
Mm. Or a crier, you mean?
No, I don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't cry.
You hate movies with women when you drink.
No. Mad Max sucks.
He hates,
but just
he
forget
hates
about that.
Movies.
Whatever.
Well, as the resident non-drinker, what do you think I would be like as a drunk?
The same way you would be if you smoked weed. You would talk about stuff. You would explain things to people. You would let me tell you this story. Have I told you this? We'd tell you yes, and you'd still tell it. And within 12 minutes, you'd be sound asleep.
He'd be giggly, too. I could see that.
I feel like it wouldn't last long.
The last time I ever saw Dave. You know, he'd probably run off in his underwear talking to anything that he thinks would listen to
him. Oh, he would talk
to
anybody. You'd put him in a car with an Uber driver, forget it. He would, like, extend the distance he was going just to have a conversation.
Let's go to Reno.
What country are you from? Oh, West Africa. Why? Let me tell you about my kids. And then you're done. Like, he just talked.
That sounds like what I do now.
I know.
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
It would just be more of it until you passed out.
All right. So is our conclusion that we do have changes in personality when we... I'm confused now. Do we or do we not?
I don't feel like I think, like we were discussing, parts of who you are kind of amplified to a certain extent when you drink. But truthfully, the only thing I could say about me that changes is that extroversion. I am a little bit more extroverted, but I'm also naturally... I like talking to people. So I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a difference.
says our resident drunk Emma Kate.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's our trending topic, which is truth in the age of Trump. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At PsychBytes, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. PsychBytes is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbytes.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, Emma Kate Wright, all in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is truth in the age of Trump. And so right now we're recording the same week that all the stuff's heating up with, it's been after the firing of Comey. It's been after the disclosure of sharing information with the Russians in the Oval Office. It's been the Comey memo. It's been all that kind of stuff. Things are very much heating up. So do you guys have any predictions? I like that we're recording this because then we can kind of go on record. Any predictions about how this whole thing is going to go? Is it going to blow over? Is it going to be a big deal? Is he going to be impeached? What's your guess? Just before we even get into our main topic, what's
Dave,
your guess? Frank?
As a psychologist, you may not be aware of this, but the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior.
I did not know that. That is news to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to write that down.
Only going to get worse, and I predict an impeachment prior to January of 2018.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say probably going to be impeached by January.
And actually, I think he kind of wants to be impeached mm-hmm. so he can just go back to his awesome life.
I don't know if he's going to get impeached, but one of the things that's going to continue to happen is the further into his presidency he gets and the closer to elections for other government positions, the Republican GOP is going to start to drop in terms of his support, because if for those that are up for re-election, they do not want to be associated with this guy one iota.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the impeachment. I think it might be likely, but I definitely agree with what Frank's saying, is that this kind of personality, when he's backed into a corner and things start heating up, he doesn't become less of himself. He becomes
right.
more of this, right?
That's right.
So you get all the more attacks on others, externalizing blame. My big concern, and I'm serious about this, my big concern is that there'll be what we call the Reichstag fire, which is what happened in Germany when
right.
There was a fire in a parliament building, and it was used as sort of the precursor to shut down civil rights and so on. But it's kind of a shorthand for saying there's going to be something like, okay, we're going to declare war on North Korea, or we're
right.
going to do something that's going to be a diversion that now everybody's going to have to rally behind, or it's going to change the subject in some significant way. That feels like a likely outcome for me.
Well, it's even like what you just said, how his back's to the wall, he becomes more of himself. Well, that's what he said to the Coast Guard graduate speech. He said, quote, put your head down and fight, fight, fight. And that's what he's going to do. And the other thing that has happened in the past, he had a close inner circle of family around him, and I think they kind of kept him on the rails. But now he doesn't have that. He doesn't have close family around him in the same way he has. His circle's much bigger, and so he's just flailing away. There's no telling. Every day is,
you know,
it's just a new day.
You know you've hit it big time when you give a speech to the Coast Guard. Let me tell you, that's something I really want to be able to put on my CV.
Yeah, Liberty University and the Coast Guard
yeah.
one
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, that idea that he's you know, going to fight, fight, fight. That's how he's succeeded. That's how he's been successful. And what the difference is that when you're a businessman and you're very wealthy and powerful and you pull all the stuff that he does, it works. You know, people back down, people get intimidated, people change their behavior, or they curry favor with you or whatever. But when it's in the public eye like this, especially when it's in politics, public service, he can't hide that stuff. And so there's no hiding it now. And that's part of what's happening now.
Right.
So let's talk specifically about the whole issue of truth. And we have a series that's coming up this week on Shrink Tank that is the same title as the podcast, which is Truth in the Age of Trump. And we're really, it's a four-part series talking about these issues of what's happened to truth in this era. So we have a president that says things that suit him, including things that are not true. We have a political climate where facts are discarded in a variety of ways, and that there's also no real intellectual curiosity about that. And so what do you think is happening to this concept of truth and how we think about facts in this era? What's your take on that, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, we've always known that politics and being very direct and truthful has always been a slippery slope. But it's really where his hubris, he doesn't even try. Like there's no trying to camouflage or mask the deception or the misleading information. It's almost like he revels in it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's been completely discrediting the media and, you know, it's all fake news. And because of that, that's undermining the free press. And the press is one of the main ways that we can kind of keep his power in check. And so to me, this feels really dangerous that the truth, you know, it's hard to discern what's real, what's not.
Well, you know, that's what I always talk about this, but I was listening to Howard Stern. And Sal, one of his guys on his show, was having a discussion with this guy, Brent, about Trump. And he said, somebody asked him, where do you think the information came from about providing this information to the Russians? And Sal said, oh, that's just the media. That's just trumped up. It's not real. It's made up. And then they said, but Trump admitted it. He said he did it. And even after saying that, then the argument shifts to, well, it's for this other reason. And I feel like a lot of his supporters, they're just not interested in truth. And the truth just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you think go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
No, you go. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and Trump did not create distrust within the media. He's exploiting it. And so there was already through 24-hour news cycle social media and using hyperbole and, bait clicking type of headlines that there's already at some degree of suspicion and distrust with a lot and bias towards media. And he's just feeding off that to where if he can get people to say, you know, do you really trust what they're telling you? And somebody says, yeah, you know what, they tend to exaggerate. They tend to focus just on the negative. And that's one of the smoke screens that he has, like Emma Kate said. And then people really discredit what they're saying and they don't really analyze what he's saying and what he's doing as the president of the United States.
Well, that and then like he takes away all of the environmental stuff that was previously associated with the government. And so now, you know, we're trying to minimize climate change. We're replacing people on our Environmental Protection Agency with members. We're replacing scientists with members of business that contribute to pollution. So it's just, you know, it's classic politics, but in a way that is it feels so dangerous to me.
Well, there are three aspects that we explore in the series, and I'll tell you all three, and then I'm going to ask you a question or two about each one. The first is information overload. The second is disintermediation. And the third is the echo chamber. So the first one about information overload, and that is that now we've gotten so many sources of information through a bazillion cable channels and literally millions upon millions of internet sites and all kinds of information coming at us, that because of that, we don't have a good way of filtering out what is true from fact, what is something that's our preference from not. What do you guys think about that whole idea of the information overload?
Well, like even when we were talking earlier, the article about the spinners, we wouldn't have that issue if it wasn't for the internet. I mean, it just everything happens and spreads like wildfire. And I don't think we are equipped, or many people are even equipped, to be able to process that information. I mean, this is going to sound super narcissistic, but I mean, I'm able, partly I was taught in graduate school, but I'm able to look at a news story, read it, parse out details of saying, well, you know, that fits, it doesn't fit, that's contradictory, and collect this evidence and make assumptions. But not everybody does that, and they just sort of scan it. They get these little news bites, and it's just
a
mess.
And not everybody has huge hands like Frank,
so
he can
the
read.
Biggest hands,
he can read an article because his hands are
hands.
Huge.
Biggest hands to grab you by the neck.
I don't
Hedley.
Want to sound narcissistic.
I'm gonna choke you out, Hedley.
I can read things others can't.
But I think Frank is making a valid point in the sense that previously, before the internet, before computers, before really, you know, rapid access to information, people would assume, okay, if it's in text, if it's in writing, then it's been looked over, it's been reviewed
right.
in some way, and that's just not the case now.
And that's part of, like, you guys are looking at it from the consumer perspective, but from the writer or the journalist perspective, I mean, the onslaught of social media, personal blogs, everybody has a platform, is that it used to be a few publications, you knew there was legitimate journalistic integrity, that they'd gone to school for that, that they go through an editorial process to vet the conclusions that they're citing. And now anybody can create a platform where they're sharing their thoughts or opinions, and they can spin it and they can make it look nice and fancy where someone believes that it's rigorous research and data.
And that's the second point, which is disintermediation. Craig Pohlman wrote about that, and that is taking out the middleman of like the gatekeepers. So in other words, now it used to be back in the day that you could trust certain sources. Like this had been vetted. There was an editorial process. There was a thorough kind of examination of the facts. And now, because everybody can have a blog, everybody can have a website, people have access to not only listening to information, but also putting it out there, that now we've taken that away. And if someone wants to find some crazy bit of information or a conspiracy theory or this kind of thing, we've removed those gatekeepers in a lot of ways, through Twitter, through online blogs and so on. So we've removed that kind of that middleman, the gatekeepers that tell us this is information you can trust or not. It feels like that's come from a fundamental distrust of the media and of institutions. Would you agree?
I think so. I and I'll tell you, it was fueled by this past election, when everybody's predicting that Clinton would win, and then they don't. And that mistrust has come to the point where I think polling people were calling, and people just lied. Said, no, I'm not going to tell you, or I'm going to tell you something else. It's just a huge trust factor, and the institutions around us, I think, are failing. I mean, I've told you before, I think we're Rome. I think we're Rome.
Well, but I mean, the trust also goes with the fact that the media has become biased to an extent. You know, there really has not been that much coverage going back to the election of the scandal that happened with the DNC. And really, you know, that's a bigger story that hasn't gotten a lot of press. And it's because it undermines Democratic Party versus Republican Party. So, you know, it's important to acknowledge that there is some bias, too.
I also think that without the middleman, it takes a lot more effort on an individual to vet the information they're being bombarded with. You know, if you look at social media, you'll see how many people like or share an article that they actually haven't read the content. And then you look underneath with the comments, and sometimes people will call them out, say, did you actually read this? Or, you know, that's not what it says. But that's kind of the culture that we've gotten ourselves into. We see a headline that's on some level resonates with us emotionally. We like, we share, without even looking at the content within the article itself.
And that all brings us to the last point, which is the echo chamber. And the echo chamber is that you surround yourself with the voices that only say what you say or want to hear. And that with social media and with some of the developments in other kinds of media that we're talking about, that's only increased because people always surround themselves, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, with like-minded people and similar people. And now, you know, the studies that say most people, their Facebook feeds are much more in line with their own political views in terms of the friends that they have, the sources that they've liked, things like that, than not. And same thing for Twitter, same thing for the sites that people look at. And so what that does is it reinforces this idea that you're right. I used a story in the article. I wrote this article for the series, that there was a guy who went into this pizza place in Washington, D.C., and he was convinced that that Hillary Clinton and some of the Democrats were running a child trafficking ring. It was like child sex slaves that were run out of this pizza place.
Yeah, I buy
that.
And
he was convinced of it to the point where he brought guns in. He shot up. He didn't kill anybody, but he shot locks off a door. And he's facing many years in federal prison, and he was convinced of it. And his quote afterwards was, "I think I had some bad information." But if
wow. Yeah,
if you go into those circles, and I'm not just talking about on the left or the right, it's both. It's on the extreme sides of the left and the right that they're, because people are saying the same things and reinforcing certain things, it allows people to believe really nutty things. So have you guys seen more of that? And do you agree that that's happening?
I mean, yeah, I think so. But I guess I kind of have a related question where you were talking about social media and the things that you were seeing, the people you're surrounding yourself with. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Facebook have algorithms within their technology that basically whatever you like, they will send more similar things related to
yes.
those likes. So it's kind of like
yes.
you're creating a bubble for yourself, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah, that's the echo chamber. Right. I mean, that's one aspect of the echo chamber. So last thing I want to ask just to wrap this up is, what do we do about this? Like, what is the beginning of addressing any of this stuff?
And I think we need to open dialogue and listen. You know, one of the things that you see is the second somebody hears something that they don't like or disagree with, they talk over them, they interrupt them, and oftentimes it will, you know, get reduced to kind of name-calling and discrediting the other person rather than to really listen and to develop a culture where we can listen and disagree without attacking and recognize that oftentimes there are multiple valid perspectives on a lot of things. And it really comes down to, can you tolerate somebody thinking or believing something different than you without really attacking them on a character level?
All righty. Well, we're going to take our last break. And when we come back, it's going to be our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Back again with Dave Verhagen, Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright, and we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Jonathan, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm a big fan of the show Bob's Burger, and recently they dropped an album of the music from the show, Bob's Burger's music album. It is 112 tracks of music from the show, and if you love the show, you know how the music really captures the atmosphere and tone of it. Highly recommend it, Bob's Burger music album.
Emma Kate.
So I am a big fan of pop music, and Miley Cyrus has actually released a new single called Malibu. And for those who are into this, this is a big shift from her Bangers album. It's more poppy, more folky, a little bit more cheerful and upbeat. And I actually really like the song. Check it out.
Okay. We never critique each other's doctor's orders. I don't want to ask honest questions. Do you like the song?
Do you really like it? I think it's fun.
It bored me to death.
It's repetitive, but I really liked it.
Again, it's the end of society.
I drove my car off the road.
15 years younger, or like way more actually than you guys. So
It might be because your brain cells are dying.
Am I saying that it's like Beethoven concerto, like something amazing like that? No, but I really like it. It's just enjoyable.
Comparing Beethoven to Miley Cyrus, she likes music
that makes Dave want to drive off a cliff.
That's fine. Just keep driving.
It's a win-win for both of you.
Unlike all the Beethoven concertos I listen to throughout the week. All right, Frank, how about you?
This is a doctor's warning. There is a new social trend in social media called Blue Whale. And if you're a parent listening to this, avoid it at all costs. Talk to your children. But basically, on Instagram and other social sites, there are some really scary people that put kids on a 50-day dare. And each day is an increasingly intense dare, which sometimes causes running up and punch a stranger, steal a thing, leading to self-harm. And on day 50, they tell you to kill yourself. They tell you how to do it. And in Russia so far, there are 130 cases of people killing themselves because of this trend. It's called Blue Whale. It's legit.
Is it fake news?
No, I have legitimately researched this.
All right. Okie dokie. And my recommendation is a book called Letterman, The Last Giant of Late Night. It is a history of David Letterman. It talks about his personal life and then also just professionally in the show. If you're a fan of American comedy, this is a must read. So I highly recommend it. Letterman, Last Giant of Late Night. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about movies and TV and all kinds of cool things in pop culture. Make sure you check out our series, Truth in the Age of Trump, on shrinktank.com. And please follow us on Twitter at shrink_tank and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about us and make it a good week.